This is an emotional day of returnings and transitions, and I'm going to get through it, I swear I am. There is one tissue left in the box. So, I'd like to start this morning by telling you all a story about a long time ago when I was a part of a youth group at my local UU congregation in Stony Brook, New York. We were a tiny group of motley crew of kids, who spent Sunday mornings on old furniture packed in a room in the children's wing of the church. Sometime during the winter of my 15th year, I received a flyer in the mail for a UU youth conference on Star Island. It was a double-sided, handwritten, and then photocopied flyer. I think the theme of the conference that year was mandalas. I have no idea how they got my address, but when I read this invitation, I knew I had to go. So I quickly reached out to my two best friends, neither of whom were UUs, and I convinced them to come with me for a week on an island off the coast of Maine. We give huge props to our parents, who, for some reason, were willing to shuttle us up to Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and drop us off on the dock and watch us board the Thomas Layton to places unknown. That decision changed my life. That week was the first time that I can recollect being conscious of the fact that people are extraordinary. And that they have things to teach me. I had stumbled into a gathering of youth who were wholly committed to creating community with one another. They led an immersive week-long conference with morning workshops, digging deep into lots of different subjects. One-shot afternoon workshops designed to be more lighthearted and impromptu. Evening family groups where everyone checked in, where youth kept an eye out for other youth who might be struggling. There were people playing music on the porch at all hours, laying in the lawn in the sunshine, talking. Hikes around the island, hours-long games at tables in the lobby, dance parties and coffee houses, and worship every night with candle-filled lanterns leading the way to the tiny stone chapel at the top of the hill that we would pack full, bodies draped across one another, occupying every window ledge, sometimes even sitting on the steps in the entrance, singing harmonies, testifying about love, sharing poems written with the raw, wide-open eyes of teenagers who have just discovered so many things. My friendships with UU youth were among my first experiences of love for people other than my family. As teens, we seek to trust and love and lean on others as we move through that process of separating from our own families. If we're lucky enough to find people who treat us well, we often fall into one another deep and fast during those years. We love hard. We soak up energy and inspiration from each other. We move with ease from grief to laughter, from hard truth to goofy humor. It can be a beautiful time of exploration and growth. My friends and I would travel hundreds of miles back then to be with one another. A pod of them might show up at my house. I remember spending many New Year's Eves in piles on my living room floor or moving like a pack through my family's 4th of July party. We would invade my mother's kitchen to make meals together or just lean on the counters, throw darts at the dartboard, and talk about our struggles and our dreams. If you ask my parents to describe us in those days, they would point out that we were almost always attached to each other, our arms draped around one another as though each were an essential appendage to the other. We shared a deep, joyful connection, giddy, loving friendship swimming with admiration. In my eyes, they could do no wrong. Everything about them filled my heart and gave me energy. As I've aged, most of those friendships have endured, and those people are woven so deeply into who I am that I suspect I wouldn't recognize myself without the things I've learned from them. How I love has become a little less intense these days. I've grown more comfortable with myself and a bit more cautious of others, but I still flutter at the magic of people. Just as suffering makes us wise for future challenges, loving makes us better at loving. I don't know how many of you watched the wedding of Prince Harry and Meghan Markle that happened 2 weeks ago. It was a spectacle, to be sure, and royal weddings aren't really my cup of tea, really. But I happened to come across a recording of the sermon that was offered by Bishop Curry, and it was a sermon. His message was about the power of love, and he dropped some hard truth into that message. He took hold of the opportunity to speak to the world through the words that he shared at that wedding, and he didn't waste the moment. "There's power in love," he said. "Don't underestimate it. Don't even over-sentimentalize it. There's power. Power in love. If you don't believe me, think about a time when you first fell in love. The whole world seemed to center around you and your beloved. Oh, there's power. Power in love. There's a certain sense in which when you are loved and you know it, when someone cares for you and you know it, when you love and you show it, it actually feels right. There's something right about it. And there's a reason for it. The reason has to do with the source. We are made by a power of love, and our lives were meant and are meant to be lived in that love. That's why we're here. This is what Bishop Curry told the world. He said, "When love is the way, then no child will go to bed hungry in this world ever again. When love is the way, we will let justice roll down like a mighty stream and righteousness like an ever-flowing brook. When love is the way, poverty will become history. When love is the way, the earth will be a sanctuary. When love is the way, we will lay down our swords and shields down by the riverside and study war no more. When love is the way, there's plenty good room for all of God's children. Because when love is the way," he says, "we actually treat each other, well, like we're actually family. You hold that power. We hold that power. Right here, right now, we have all of the ingredients to change the world. We have extraordinary people to learn from. We have commitment to change. And we have the ability to inspire. We have gifts to give. There are never guarantees. But none of this happens without us committing to creating community, here or wherever we find ourselves. Out in the world, try as we might to find the perfect words to decry an action happening 4 states away. It's really right here where we need to begin. Everything that is dark or misdirected in the larger world, it lives right here. It lives inside of us. It lives in our families. It lives in our community. It lives in our church. We all have bias and blind spots and ways that we could do better. We are all, at times, maybe most times, seduced by this culture of domination that is threaded throughout our history and right up to this very moment, where we strive to be at the top so that we don't have to be at the bottom, where we think more about the things we want than the people we know. That's the antithesis of the love of which Bishop Curry spoke, and of the love at the root of the covenant of our shared faith. We all have healing to do and apologies to make. We all need to be loved and to be held. We all need to know that someone will catch us if we fall. And we are all responsible for catching one another. No matter how much money you make, you cannot outsource the job of being in relationship with people. And you cannot fast track the process. But when you commit to that work, with all of its challenges and sacrifice, there is something right about it, something inspirational. Because when love is the way, we actually treat each other like family. May it be so.